Let's turn our Bibles back to Ecclesiastes. We're going to finish the sixth chapter and then move into the seventh chapter. And time permitting, we may even finish the seventh chapter. The last time we were looking at Ecclesiastes, we were looking at this man to whom God gave riches and wealth and honor to the degree where, well, he didn't have any need, any lack, but God didn't give him the power to enjoy it for whatever reason, only known to him, of course, but a stranger, someone who wasn't a part of his family and someone who obviously he didn't want to enjoy his wealth, actually did, and Solomon called it an evil disease. He went on to say that if the man lived many years, actually 2,000 according to verse 6, and though he had 100 children according to verse 3, and if he wasn't able to find fulfillment in spending his stuff, then the point was, well, what was the purpose of living? Because as we've already seen, the world looks at life from the vantage point of materialism. To them, life is the stuff. We saw that Jesus said the exact opposite, that a man's life does not consist in the abundance of the things which he possesses. In other words, no one gains any more life by accumulating more and more stuff, because you are not your stuff. Your stuff is your income. It is your wealth. It is not you. You are you. God's not going to judge you and your money next to you. He's going to judge you and me and all of mankind for what we've done for him or against him. And Solomon concluded that it would have been better for this man to have never been born than to have been born, to have lived his life accumulating all this stuff and lose it all, and to deal with the embarrassment that he has to deal with for the rest of his days. It would have been better if he had never been born. In fact, a miscarriage is better than him. That's sad. And we're going to go to verse 7. All the labor of a man is for his mouth. In other words, all that a man works for, he works for his food. Now, it's clear that I like food, but I think there are more important things in this life than food, you know. And yet the appetite is not filled. Yeah, frankly, nothing you do in this life is fulfilling, except unless God does it. I don't care what it is. There's always, you never have approached life and said, okay, well, I've done this, and that's it. I am fulfilled, and I don't really have any desire to want to do it again. Even if that were remotely true, you'd find something else that in life you were not fulfilled in, and that would frustrate you for the rest of your days. And I don't want to go off the scene saying, you know what, I regret not having done A, B. You know what? You're not going to do it. I think if you just accept the fact that for the most part, all these dreams and whims and things that we may have imagined ourselves and want to do in life, that the chances are you're not going to succeed in it, and the chances are that even if you do, it won't be fulfilling. So either way, the best thing to do is to fear God, to keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man, rather than to try to fulfill some earthly dream that really and biblically has no fulfillment, even if you were to obtain that for which you desire. It just doesn't fulfill. And you find generation after generation after generation that seems to think that, well, the older one didn't do it right, and they didn't know how to do the thing right, didn't know how to appreciate what they had, and now we're going to be the one to do it. And you're not at all. Well, God's desire, obviously, and God's counsel isn't that a man just works for his mouth. Verse 8, for what hath the wise more than the fool? What hath the poor that knoweth to walk before the living? Better is the sight of the eyes than the wandering of the desire. This also is vanity and vexation of spirit. The wise man may well become the fool and the poor by circumstances of life. The poor person has no advantage either because his desires outstrip his ability to receive what he wants. So both of them primarily are unfulfilled. You cannot find fulfillment in this life. I'm going to say this now, and in fact, I'm going to probably say it again in chapter 7. No, I'm going to wait to chapter 7. That way in the context will be a lot more clear. So what is Solomon's conclusion to all this? Well, better it is to see what one sees than to desire what one does not have. So it's better, again, to enjoy the present than to feed oneself with vain, fruitless desires. And then he said, well, that's vanity too, and wind chasing. All the conclusions of life, all the conclusions of life under the sun, all the conclusions of life without God are completely meaningless. Now, when you're young and stupid and full of your own way, you don't think about that. You know, the whole idea of actually presenting clarity of truth and speaking about these things, you know, you kind of think, well, you're an old man, what do you know? Well, the fact that I'm an old man, the question should be, what do you know? You know, I mean, I've made it by the grace of God. And I think there may be something I have to say. We got it reversed, because young people know everything now. You know, to the world, the young people know everything. The old people are just around, you know, to look like a bunch of morons. But the fact is, the very fact that we're here logically ought to tell you that, you know, we do know a little something, that we're not just a bunch of goober heads, and that we can teach you and train you if you're willing to listen. And in the church, that's God's plan. According to Titus, that's God's plan, that the young people learn and emulate the example of those who are righteous and faithful. That which has been is named already, and it is known that it is man. Neither may he contend with him that is mightier than he. I think he's saying, what can you do to fight against God? What can you do or undo what God has already set in motion? You can't stop it. And I don't think this is some wisdom born from an understanding of God. I think it's just more madness. You know, this case, sera, sera. What are you going to do about it? God's already set things in motion. You can't change it, so what's the conclusion? Seeing there be many things that increase vanity, what is man the better? Well, since God's going to allow whatever happens to happen, and you can't do anything about it, and the net result of this entire life, which we all live, as wind-chasing emptiness, then what better or of what greater value is man than the vain things that he accumulates? No one has an advantage, because the end result is always going to be the same. Wherever you stop in life without God is going to be vanity. Wherever you park your bus is going to be Vanity Street, Wind-Chasing Avenue. It's going to all end up the same way. What a tragic and foolish mindset lived by those who live their lives under the sun, but that's all they have. There is no hope in Solomon's words, no joy, no peace, nothing. And I don't know about you, but the society that I'm looking at, I don't see any joy. I'm not talking about the momentary experience of pleasing the flesh for the second and then having to realize that, you know, that's not joy. Every year people accumulate, or they may get something, you know, certain holidays they may get something, and there's that momentary joy. And as I've heard for many, many decades, oh, we could just, you know, have the spirit of Christmas all year long. What? You do have the spirit of Christmas all day long. It's called covetousness. You have it every day. The only difference is you convince yourselves that, you know, maybe we're not as bad as God said that we are. But the fact is, you are, and every day you prove it. You have the spirit of vanity, the spirit of emptiness, and the spirit of covetousness every day. And with that, you can't have joy, you can't have peace, you can't have nothing except wind chasing, emptiness, and colossal nonsense. But this is life lived under the sun. This is a life lived without God. Even though they may mention his name, they do not worship him, they do not serve him, they do not want him at all. God is to be around only as he serves my desires. Verse 12, for who knoweth what is good for man in this life, all the days of his vain life, which he spendeth as a shadow? For who can tell a man what shall be after him under the sun? His vain life. All the things that Solomon said about a man, he keeps concluding that man's life is vain, because man's life is short. Nothing that he possesses, whether it be material wealth, whether it be human wisdom, whether it be prestige, none of that will keep him. None of that will sustain him. His life is still nothing but a shadow. And he's saying something quite profound here, that the ungodly man or woman knows nothing good in his life, because their value system is materialism, which we've already seen and Solomon has said and will say again, does not have the capacity to satisfy. The lifelong goal equals vanity and wind chasing, and yet multitudes live and die in this fashion, and their entire lives live without God are nothing but a waste of time. The shadow of their fruitless lives speaks of the brevity of it. And you know, I've been there. I know how fruitless it is. Your mind and heart tells you, you know what, you're living a life of vanity. And then we kind of talk ourselves out of it. You know, I don't know if you've been there, but I know I've been there before Christ. And I had what a lot of people are chasing. And you know what? When I had it all, I recognized it was nothing. Because as much as I didn't require a lot. Some people require a lot to be fulfilled or satisfied. I didn't require a lot, not a whole lot. Some people require a whole lot. With me, if I had the certain four sin groups, then I was, you know, I mean, you can only do so much of what you have. So if I had those, and I had them, and I had it more than what I even anticipated, then I was fine with it. But you know what? God made it so that it passed away. It was unraveling. At the point where I had it, he unraveled it all. And I had nothing. And then I figured, you know what, I don't want to go through this again, because it took so long to get to this place, this cycle. I might as well end it. You know, there's no need to me be around here. I don't want to go through this mess again, because I see that it, and in a moment's notice, it can all be gone. There's nothing you can do about it. It's a vain life. It's a shadow. Matthew Henry said, since everything is vanity, man cannot no more please himself with the hopes of what shall be after him to his children and family than with the relish of what is with him, since he can neither foresee himself nor can anyone else foretell to him what shall be after him. He doesn't know. He doesn't know what's going to happen to his family after his demise. He doesn't even know what's going to happen to him the next day. A man who lives under the sun doesn't really care about eternity, so he doesn't think about what's coming after. Could you think about this for a second? A person who believes in God, the God of Scripture, who believes in the hereafter, believes in heaven, you know, lives this life with the understanding this isn't all there is to know and all there is to experience. But, you know, in the day when we were trained that we came from monkeys and protoplasmic ooze and amino acids, there was nothing but despair. Because if this is all there is to live for, and I came from a monkey, and, you know, I came from a protein shake, and I came from an amino acid ooze, and there's nothing after that, then it's like, okay, and that's it, nothing. You're here for a blip, and then you're gone. I mean, I don't know about you, but that didn't bring joy. It brought the mentality, let me get all I can get. The television commercial said, grab for all the gusto you can. And everybody grabbed hold of that statement, because frankly, that was in the hearts of everybody. We just waited for someone to turn it into a pithy saying, then we all jumped on it. But that's all a man had. Grab for all the gusto you can, because you have nothing else. Chapter 7. A good name is better than precious ointment, and a day of death than the day of one's birth. It's this guy. You keep reading this, And if you don't read it in the context of the rest of the book, you might think this is something good. It's not good. Not good at all. Reputation or fame to someone who lives life under the sun is better than wealth. Precious ointment was the most costly you could purchase. And Solomon has not escaped this brazen logic of death being better than life. But again, we are looking at life lived under the sun. And as I said many times before, it would appear that the writer begins to share some great and profound truths and then dashes it away with absurd conclusions. And frankly speaking, I'm not so positive as many of the commentators that this chapter stands alone from chapter 6, or frankly any other chapter for that matter. The subject of chapter 6 was a rich man, as we saw, through whom through some adversity lost all that he had. And without his wealth, his reputation went into obscurity. And then Solomon began to praise the dead by using a miscarried child and saying that this child was better off than the rich man who lost all of his stuff. He concluded the chapter by talking about how God fixes everything and it will not change anyway, and you have no idea what shall come after your death. And so his conclusion was, it's all vanity. And keep in mind that he has already begun the praise of the dead mentality in chapter 4, and he began to see the injustices of life live under the sun. With all that in mind, let's look at this 7th chapter and see if he introduced anything new, or was he continuing the same thoughts that were in previous chapters. And he starts off by saying that the death of a man is better than his birth. If his conclusions came from his observations of life lived under the sun, then that would be the correct view to believe, of course. Then his conclusions were that it would be better to die than to live in oppression and to live without one's stuff or possessions. That's nothing but earthly wisdom. Your reputation means something, and if you lost that, why bother living? Verse 2, it's better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting, for that is the end of all men, and the living will lay it to heart. He said it's better to go into the funeral parlor than to the banquet or to the party. And it's, I guess, to bring it up to date, it's better to go to the funeral home than a company picnic, because death is the inevitable end of all the living, and the living will set their heart on that fact. So he's saying, you're going to die. I've been telling you about this death wish all along, so it's better to go to the funeral home and face, this is where you're going to end up. This is your end. So it's better just to think death, view death, than it is to just keep living for no reason, because this is inevitably where you're all going to go. The funeral reveals an axiom of life, and that is, we don't really come here to celebrate life. I know Forrest Lawn lies because people don't want to face the fact they're there for a funeral. We're here to celebrate the life of so-and-so. No, you're not. You're there to put the person in the ground and to tell a few lies from a hired preacher that this person was so good, though they never served God for 5 good minutes. And now, of course, you usher everybody into heaven because you're hoping for the big funeral tip. And sometimes they give tips to the preachers during funerals. I did funeral, and they asked me, did I want to get paid? I said, I don't want any money. Don't even want to be here. But now that I am, let me do it and get on about my business. Death is the axiom of life, and that is, all mankind is going to die. And those with understanding will remember that fact, and it should guide their behavior. But in what manner? I mean, Solomon's saying we're all going to die, so live it up. But it's better to die than to live it up, because you're going to die. Does that make any sense to you? Because it doesn't make any sense to me at all. It's better to just spend all you have, because it's vanity anyway, and it's better for some that they were never born. So it's better to go to the funeral home than to go to the company party, because you're all going to end up dead anyway. So the whole life is nothing but one big vain shadow chasing show. And that should guide your life. Well, to what end? And he says, verse 3, sorrow is better than laughter, for by the sadness of the countenance, the heart is made better. Yeah, grief is better than joy, for by the sadness of one's face or appearance, the understanding is focused on death. There you go again. Focused on death. Yeah, it's better just to be sorrowful. Now it's let's be sorrowful all our lives. One chapter is be happy, doesn't matter, you're going to die. And next chapter is you lost everything, doesn't matter, you're going to die. And that now we're talking about, well, it's just focus on death now. The heart of the wise in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools in the house of mirth. So the wise heart goes to the funeral, but the heart of the stupid and the dull and arrogant and the simpleton goes to all the parties, all the dances, and all the get-togethers. They think that life is one big party. They take no thought of death. You know, I like sometimes to focus on it to certain people, and they really, they get disturbs them. Because I think they think they're not going to die, or it doesn't matter. So they don't want to think about it, focus on it, or talk about it. Especially as older you get, you don't want to think about it. You didn't want to think about it when you were younger. Now you're older and closer to it, you don't want to think about it. When are you going to think about it? When it's too late? I've talked to people on deathbeds who didn't want to think about it. Doctor says you have X number of months to live. It's time to think about it. I don't want to. What do you mean you don't want to think about it? You don't have much choice but to think about it. Don't talk to me about death. You know what? Death is going to talk to you real quick. Verse 5, it's better to hear the rebuke of the wise and for a man to hear the song of fools. It's far better to listen to the instruction of the wise and the reproof of the wise. In this case, it could refer to the lessons of death than to listen to the ode of the stupid, the dull, and the arrogant, and the simpleton, which basically says, don't worry about it. Verse 6, for as the crackling of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of the fool. This also is vanity. It's true. As the crackling of thorns under a pot, so was the hollow laughter of the stupid, the dull, the arrogant, and the simpleton. This expression refers to the frivolity and lightness and carelessness of life. You know, when you hear thorns crackling under a pot, you may think there's something really going on there. The fire is really, you know, intense. And when the thorns crackle and pop, sparks are sent out. People might be led to believe this is really an indicator of how fiery and intense the wood is. No, it isn't. It's shallow. It doesn't mean anything. It's just noise. And that's exactly what happens with a laughing fool, someone who just lives his life in sheer laughter, without thinking. It's amazing. Solomon calls this frivolity and lightness and carelessness of life vain, empty, and useless. The carefree, frivolous life is the life of the stupid, a life that lives for the now with no concern for the hereafter. That's the life of the simpleton. The laughter and silliness of this world is the life of the arrogant. The life of the proud is the life of the dull-minded fool. It's all vain, empty, and useless. And when death comes, there is an eternal separation from God and from any hope of salvation. God is not going to be impressed with our laughter. Reality hits when you hit that throne. God ain't going to be laughing. And all the expressions, well, God needed an angel and God needed this, I tell you, that's going to be met with reality and judgment. That's the wisdom of a fool living life under the sun. They always want to tell you what God needs. A God they don't know or worship. It's an insult to God. Well, God needed a drummer, some drummer. I think Max Roach? Yeah, and someone said, well, God needed a drummer in heaven. That's the wisdom of life under the sun. Yeah, that happened too with Phil Rizzuto. Mm-hmm. God needed a shortstop in heaven. So 1 week, God needs a drummer. And the next time, God needs a shortstop. God needs nothing. But this is, like I said, they may mention his name, but they don't know or worship him at all. They're fools. And if they really thought about God, that fact alone would have impacted their lives. But no, they're hold on to their frivolity. Surely oppression, let me go back to this whole thing about laughter, because I'm sure I'm going to deal with it again. In fact, I'm almost certain of that. No, I'll skip it. I'll get back to it. Surely oppression maketh the wise man mad, and the gift destroyeth the heart. In other words, extortion makes a wise man act like a fool, and a bribe destroys or kills the understanding. Yeah, that's true. Better is the end of a thing than the beginning thereof, and the patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. Well, at the end, of course, God will deal with the matters of the proud, but as for you in the now, it's better to be patient than exalted in this life. You know, these things, when you read it, it's kind of just stupid, but this is the mentality you have to always remember. This is the life of people who live under the sun. This isn't the worship of God. Be not hasty in thy spirit to be angry, for anger resteth in the bosom of fools. Don't be in such a hurry to get angry or to be indignant. Now you have two different Hebrew words for angry. You have angry and anger, and they're different. The second word for anger is the word for frustration. Okay. If you are quick to get ticked and to be frustrated in this life because of the affairs in this life, then Solomon concludes that you are stupid, dull, arrogant, and a simpleton. So if you see the words anger resteth in the bosom, it means that frustration encloses itself or rests itself within the person. There are many who are frustrated in this life, and that would be true of all, frankly, live their lives under the sun. Some just express it more than others. And it's not just a few people. I mean, a lot of people are very frustrated in life. And I'm just keep that thought in mind. How many people handle the frustrations of their present life and see if we all have not been foolish in this area of life? I mean, how do you handle frustrations? And frustrations are being, I guess I better say it now. No, I'm just about, well, let's see. Let's see if I should even mention it now. Yeah, I better mention it now. I was thinking just the other week, last week as a matter of fact, I was sitting in and just watching a little bit of that stupid television. And I saw some more programs, allegedly new, nothing new. It's all the same retooled junk that's coming up. And I thought to myself, has anybody, I think everybody in this room is of reasonably good intelligence, way more than mine. But have you noticed that most of the programs now and the newer programs foster anger and frustration? When you look at the fall season, look at the current season, look at all the programs that foster anger and frustration and dissatisfaction. No one's ever happy. It's all frustration and anger and bitterness and fighting. A few years ago, I remember that there were cries all over this country against, what do they call cage fighting? Ultimate Fighter. People were all from Congress to the universe were saying how horrible this is. Now there's how many leagues? This has become, you know, as common as a commercial now. You know, I mean, these guys are beating each other up. And people love it. They're paying $50-$60 to see two guys beat each other's brains out. Not to mention boxing. Boxing's out. Now it's, you know, let's do it without the gloves. Let's see who's the real man. And in that, you know, you got all these different, there are 5 or 6 times more leagues in bare-fisted fighting than in boxing. And it's growing. It's not getting any less popular. It's increasing more and more. Look at all the so-called reality shows pitting people against each other, frustration. And now they got this new nonsense where they put a whole bunch of stupid children in an island or a town on themselves. They're supposed to run their own lives. They can't even clean the room. And they're fighting, and everyone's frustrated, and the programs are frustrated and horrible. This is the way that the world is going. Everything fosters war and hatred and malice and envy. What else is there for life under the sun? Nothing. Nothing at all. Nothing. that inward frustration and the hatred, the spewing. You listen to the political scene, I'm going, these people are devils. How it used to be that, and this was a long time ago, where you would have two opposing candidates that would discuss the ideologies of each other's position. Now they're going after each other, their families, what happened to them 45 years ago when they were, you know, when they had no interest in whatever. Who cares, you know, what a candidate did when they were nine? This stuff is just brought out to just foster frustration and all these idiotic, ridiculous, and completely meaningless polls given to a completely idiotic and meaningless mindset in this country. Representative polling is the most absurd and stupid poll data in the universe. It can be manipulated and twisted to make it say anything it wants to say. And who checks the checker? And the favorite line of all these idiots, and evidently people believe it, is the American people say, nobody called me and asked me anything. You can't poll 1,000 people. This is how deceptive representative polling is. Representative polling says, we're going to take 1,000 people and we're going to use the data in those 1,000 people, these 600 people, these 300 people, and we're going to say this represents 300 million people. Do you know how absurd that sounds? Just the absurdity of me saying it. And they say, well, the American people said they're against the war. Who are the American people? Who are these people? 600 Democrats you polled? Anybody can twist polling data. This isn't anything. We're not dealing with people who are taking polling data who are believers. These are heathens. Heathens do what heathens do. They're not going to change anything. They're going to tell you exactly what they think they want you to hear, because they're trying to steer you into, you know, believing them, being frustrated by what they allow you or control your mind to perceive as a real problem with so-and-so. This is how people do this stuff. You got to learn to just shut it all out. And watch cartoons. Just shut it all out. Just shut all this nonsense out, because it's going to happen. You know, this is amazing. And the candidates are now just spewing hatred over each other. Hatred, just hatred. I just kind of laugh at this stuff. I don't watch it because I'm going to vote for the person who closely represents what's good for the country. I don't care. I mean, I do care if it's a Democrat. That's my own person, because I don't think any one of them, besides maybe Lieberman, has any hope of winning anything. But that's a personal opinion for another message. But all this spewing and hatred, Rosie old pig Donald, did I just spew me some hatred? And Donald Wig Trump and all that, and more of this stuff. And it's just, and the media just picks up on this stuff and just rams it over and over. And special reports and what are the entertainment shows? Entertainment to E.T. and all these others. They just keep ramming this junk, and Lohan and Paris, and over and over and over and over and over. We're supposed to believe this nonsense is important. And they're talking to water coolers, Paris Hilton and Lindsay Lohan and this actor and this fool that killed some pastor in his car and on and on. I mean, all these meaningless and trivial things are supposed to dominate our thinking and our lives. Well, yeah, if you live life under the sun, that's important to you. You know, someone blows up a car bomb and kills 300-400 people. Why only 6 Americans that died are important? The other people don't matter. Do you realize that the Iraqi soldiers have lost 2 to 3 times as many forces than the Americans in defending their own land? But did you hear that? Has anyone ever said that? Their lives don't matter to the American. If a plane crashes and 1 billion people die, 6 Americans were killed today. That's terrible. Let's go to their houses, bang on their door, insult their grieving moments so we can get a mic and a camera in their face and maybe get a Pulitzer for making the person cry and have some sad, stupid music in the background. This is how trivial that this stupid life is. This is how trivial this stupid state is. No wonder people are living in frustration. That's all they're being introduced to every day. They're either being told that frustration is good for you, or they keep ramming insignificant and trivial matters in your face until you get frustrated. So you're frustrated on all sides. Then you got to drive behind somebody that doesn't know what 65 means. And that's frustrating. And the guy next to you is driving 165. And he's honking and flashing his lights and fingers and guns out the windshield because you're trying to obey the law. And that's frustrating. And the food that you liked, you suddenly go to the store and guess what? They don't stock it anymore. And that's not the first time that's happened. That's happened 9 or 10 times. And that's frustrating because it happened to us. You mean to tell me you don't stock these anymore? When did you decide to stop? Well, after you brought the last one, we decided we weren't going to stock it anymore. Well, thank you for nothing. And that's frustrating. It's all vanity and wind chasing. That's why I thank God for God. Because if I didn't have the Holy Spirit and a hope for heaven after this life, I'd have slapped somebody a long time ago. And probably they might have deserved it too. And I'd have got shot too. Verse 10. And here's another foolish thing. And I've said it. I'm going to admit mine. Say not thou, what is the cause that the former days were better than these? Happy days were here. Oh, no, they ain't. They're not. And they haven't been. So they were still sinners in the day. Former days were better than these, for thou dost not inquire wisely concerning this. Stop saying, oh, for the good old days. Weren't they better than these? No. Or if we could only go back to those days. There hasn't been a day that I could recall where somebody wasn't complaining about something. Gas price was too high when it was 50 cents. I pumped it when it was 38. It was too high then. I was working during the gasoline strike. I hate, listen, all the, it was, everything was too high. Waiting in those long lines. Thank you, Jimmy Carter, for nothing. Ruining our lives. Life was so much better back then. Oh, things were so peaceful, so calm, so much better than it is today. Wasn't where I lived. I was a Negro boy in a white man's world, and it was not comfortable. It was not quiet. It was not friendly. The good old days was stay in the house and someone might not throw a brick or something through your window. That's how my days, the peaceful good old days were. And when I grew up, I realized I say this with tremendous mockery, the value of evil. And those were the good old days. Many times I almost died by that foolishness. The expression, the former days were better than these, is a common saying, and it is as foolish as it is common. There is no weight or truth in it. The former days, men were just as wicked as they are now. The thought here is that a person desired the good old days to come back. But weren't you the same person that was complimenting the advance of technology? You want to go back to the typewriter? Maybe to the pad and paper? I don't want to go back to pad and paper and a black and white television. I like the computer. I don't want to go back to the typewriter. I had to change the ribbon, had to get the correction fluid. You know, you got to make up your mind, which is the better? The answer? None of them. Why? Because it's all vanity. For us, it's good. The technology can help us, but the technology could be a curse too. You know, the Christian should be advancing and using whatever means possible to get out the gospel. To get out the word. But sometimes we let technology, well, cause us to divert from what we should be doing. Another thing to consider about saying, oh, that we were back in the good old days is the fact that there's no wisdom in that because those days have passed. And they're gone forever. You ain't no one going back to the so-called good old days. I'm not going back to a Model T. I want to get in the car and get to Brentwood within an hour. I don't want to drive maximum speed 17 miles an hour. No way. No way. Mm-mm. Those days are gone, and we should be thankful for that. And the problem isn't technology. The problem is the people that have it, like it always has been. Technology could be a real benefit, but, well, man is man. And whatever age he lives in, as long as he has a sin nature, he's just going to use whatever means at his or her disposal to sin more. So that hasn't changed. The problem is man. Man can make a wonderful device, a high digital camera, and we can record now. Are you kidding? A few years ago, that didn't exist. We didn't have any means to make our own videos. We didn't even think about that. When we were fellowship, we didn't have videos. We thought it was a great thing to even have a computer to type text. I mean, I remember the first time I typed a text, instead of writing, I was like in heaven. My Apple IIe. I'm typing my sermon. I still have some of those sermons. Keep them around. I still have some of the disc. They don't even have a machine anymore that can even do anything with them. But now the technology is it's advanced. I can write the material, put them in binders. This thing would be that high if I wrote it in handwriting. My hand would be like this because I can't write halfway anyway. So I'm very glad for computers and computers. Okay, computers, because I don't like my own writing. I find it very, very difficult to sit down and write something. I don't like it. It's much easier. Don't talk about me. It's much easier just you had to read my own writing. I got you for that. It's much easier. You just type stuff up faster, quicker. Talking to the little microphone, you know, dictation, whatever. Go back to no Stone Age. 8 years to write a sermon on a big, long, yellow pad. And you have to rewrite it. If you get another thought, you got to rewrite all from scratch. Or have 8 or 9, you know, insert here and all that. Nah, forget that. What good old days. These are the good old days. Yeah, none of them are any good. Heaven's going to be the great day. Verse 11, wisdom is good with an inheritance, and by it there is profit to them that see the sun. So wisdom doesn't necessarily mean God's wisdom. I don't believe it does at all. I don't have any reason to believe that that's the context at all, because it refers really to a man's skill or shrewdness in handling his possession. So it's good that when you're shrewd with an inheritance, when you're shrewd with your money, you know how to invest it. You know how to do this, that. Like I said about old Merv, he was a billionaire, multi-billionaire. He was shrewd in how he handled his money. And he was dead and didn't take it down with him. But he was shrewd. And they had the big party. I talked, all Governor Arnold was there talking all the noise about how much he enjoyed it. When I was interviewing Merv and he was here and he really taught me about acting and I taught him about bodybuilding. And you know, none of it worked for either one of us. It was a big thing. Big old something or another. Okay, it's gone. No one's talking about it anymore. Mm-mm. Gone, poof. That's it. Life came and went. Wheel, off, woo, dun, dun. Just spin the wheel. This is Jeopardy. That's the legacy. Okay, move on. Life's over. But wisdom is a defense, and money is a defense, but the excellency of knowledge is that wisdom giveth life to them that have it. Both skill and money are a protection. The word defense means a shadow. But the greatness of a person's skill is that which sustains. So again, you know, if you're smart and you're shrewd, you have money and what have you, but just keep all this in mind, because the conclusions are all going to be the same. Consider the work of God, for who can make that straight which he hath made crooked? Who can set things in order that God has made bent? Not a new thought at all. He's already stated this throughout the book in chapter 1, verses 13 through 15. Okay, verse 15, that which is crooked cannot be made straight, and that which is wanting cannot be numbered. 3:15, that which hath been is now, and that which is to be hath already been, and God required that which is past. All these fixed paradoxes we talked about that don't change. Mankind can't change what God has set in motion. Mankind can't correct anything. That's the conclusions again of investigating the whole issue of life under the sun. And so he hasn't changed a bit. Still coming to the same conclusions. Verse 14, in the day of prosperity be joyful, but in the day of adversity consider, God also hath set the one over against the other to the end that man should find nothing after him. I mean, if you really live like this, I have great compassion because I live somewhat like this. When you have stuff, be happy. When the stuff is gone, consider that God has set the one alongside the other for this reason. Mankind cannot discover anything that will happen after his life ends. So live it up. Enjoy what you have. And alongside of that, God has also set in motion the fact that adversity is going to happen. You just can't keep going on. Everything is the way you want it to be forever. God's going to make something hurt. And he says, God set one against the other. Balance. No new thought here. Chapter 3, verse 22. Wherefore I perceive that there is nothing better than that a man should rejoice in his own works, for that is his portion, for who shall bring him to see what shall be after him? Chapter 6, verse 11 and 12. Seeing there be many things that increase vanity, what is man the better? Or who knoweth what is good for man in his life, all the days of his vain life, which he spendeth as a shadow? Who can tell man what shall be after him under the sun? And we've seen both of these chapters already. Saw these conclusions, as in this chapter, are all wisdom under the sun. Who knows what will happen to a man in his future? So do what you got to do now, because there's nothing that you're going to do after. You don't know what's going to happen to you. So just do what you got to do now. Who knows what's going to happen to a man down here? Just eat and drink, enjoy life, because you don't know when God will end it all, and he's going to do it. That's not the wisdom from on high. All things I have seen in the days of my vanity, there is a just man that perisheth in his righteousness, and there is a wicked man that prolongeth his life in his wickedness. Yeah, okay, I've seen it. That's vanity too. Life is vain. All his empty days he has observed the injustices and the crooked paths of life under the sun. He observed that a right man, a man who lives a righteous life, lost everything, though he was righteous, while at the same time he observed the wicked man prolonging his life in wickedness, though he was wicked. That we probably questioned in our minds, maybe, possibly. We might have mused, I'm living right, yet I don't seem to be going anywhere. I've lost more since following God than I did before following God. My right living has brought more disappointments, more sorrow, more pain, more grief than ever before. I had a whole bunch of friends before I became a believer, but when I became a believer, I had no friends. Family don't want to talk to me anymore. Got fired from a job. Money I was able to borrow and can't borrow it no more. Doors closed in my face. I'm suffering more now being righteous than I did when I was a doggone heathen. I'm considering going back being heathen. Yet I see the vilest of individuals with everything, and they are enjoying their lives to the full, and they persecute me, and they get by with all the injustices, even against my own life. Why, if I'm God's child and this is his world, then why am I not enjoying any of the fruits of it? And the wicked individual who isn't God's child enjoys everything. How can this be? It isn't fair. So what? So it isn't fair. You think life is unfair? You think that life stinks for you and that you aren't getting your fair share? Well, so what? That's my question. So what? That whole entire mindset is stupid, frankly. You don't deserve anything anyway but death. None of us deserve anything but death. So the idea that we have produced something in our lives that deserves a better circumstance or outcome than we have now is absurd. The very fact we're alive another second speaks of the volumes of the grace of God, not of anything we've done. So what? So your life stinks. Big deal. We really do think of ourselves more highly than we ought to think. And that's even true in a far greater degree to those who live under the sun. We think God is unfair. You deserve nothing at all but death and hell. And so many of us who profess to be believers are walking, talking, and thinking like dull, stupid simpletons instead of looking at reality from God's perspective. And even in Psalm 73, and you know about it, or if not, read it at your study time. He had the same mentality, almost fell from his righteousness, worrying about what the wicked had, until he came into the house of God and saw their end. Then he repented. He saw what? They're going to die. And their wealth won't do them any good. It won't redeem them. It won't get them anywhere near heaven. That's why only the believer has the opportunity really to do anything with the wealth that we possess. The only ones who can. I mean, no one else does. No means whatsoever other than the believer. Period. Can really do something that matters. I got about 5 minutes. Verse 15 and 16. All things have I seen in the days of my vanity. There is a just man that perisheth in his righteousness, and there is a wicked man that prolongeth his life in his wickedness. Be not, and so what is this conclusion? Be not righteous over much, neither make thyself overwise. Why shouldest thou destroy thyself? Well, is all things in moderation. How many of you seen the commercial of Tony Sinclair and Tanqueray? All things in moderation. Mm-hmm. That's the whole thing. I'm Tony Sinclair, and this is how you Tanqueray. All things in moderation. Solomon's saying the same thing. He observed that a man who lived a righteous life, lost everything, though he was righteous, and the wicked man did the exact reverse. It brought despair along with some rather foolish circumstances. We'll look at chapter 8, verse 14, because he's going to say the same thing again. There is a vanity which is done upon the earth, that there is be just men unto whom it happeneth according to the work of the wicked. Again, there is a wicked man, or there be wicked men to whom it happeneth according to the work of the righteous. I said that this also is vanity, the same thing. So his conclusion is, well, since a good man will suffer unjustly, he said, I've seen it. Why make such an effort to live good? To be not righteous over much, neither make thyself overwise. You know, there's no need to, you know, to be fanatical about righteousness or your attempt of wisdom. Why do it? You're just going to hurt yourself. And God wouldn't want you to hurt yourself. He wants to bless you. Bless your life. Give you stuff. Make you happy, head not the tail. Why burden yourself? Do not increase in your righteousness, neither make yourself great in wisdom. Why? Because you're going to destroy yourself. Paul, much learning hath made you mad. You realize there are two times that people accuse Paul of being insane in the book of Acts? They said he was crazy. They said he was a much learned man. His learning made him nuts. He was learning too much. He was over wisdom, over wise. The man was over righteous. See, come on, Paul. You're crazy. You can't be right with all that crazy talk, Paul. Let's not get too carried away with this righteousness business. Let's not get too religious. Let's not get too serious about following God. What difference will it make? You're right, living isn't going to change anything in your life anyway. But many men who have lived righteous here have all suffered unjust treatment in spite of the fact that they were righteous. So don't ruin your life. Your life is important to you. So why ruin it? By trying to be real righteous and what have you. You don't need all that. Don't listen to that big black fool up there telling you to be righteous. What does he know? Is he doing it? Don't ruin yourself. You go through all that trouble. You're a good person. You pay your debts. You don't kill animals. You don't beat your children. You didn't cuss out your wife or husband. You didn't do thus and such. You don't need to get carried away. You've been to church 5 times this year. That's just more than enough. You read your Bible every now and then when you feel you need to. going through all these changes for? Why are you listening to people, you know, pressing your life to do thus and such? You don't need to do all that. Have God said? Many, many people live with this under the sun mentality that are more than willing to give you plenty of advice to slow down towards any zeal at all. Just slow you down. You need to have a religion that helps you. That kind of religion, that'd make you crazy. They start calling you like an Iraqi or something. You crazy, because you're fanatical. You're the kind of Christian that they just talked about on CNN. The far right extreme lunatic. You don't want that in your life. You don't want to be identified with that. You want to be moderate. You want people to be attractive to you. No, I want to go to heaven. That means I'm going to have to live in a renunciation of this world. And that's not some secret renunciation either. Just slow down. Don't get carried away with all of this. You don't want to lose all of your friends at the job. You may need them. All you're going to do is isolate and hurt yourself. You don't want to lose your family. Your fanaticism is causing mama to cry, and dad shakes his head. We thought you loved us. What they tell you? What they told you? We thought you loved us. You making mama cry. Because you won't come to her drunken party. Mama crying. Daddy shaking his head. All right, so you're making mama cry. Daddy shaking his head. The kids speak evil of your name. We thought you loved us. You used to spend so much time with us, and now all you do is stay at that church. All you do is read your Bible. All you do is listen to tapes about the Bible. You're causing division in the home. Taking this God thing too seriously. I'm afraid of you might be in a cult. He's a cult leader. Been branded with that a few times. I'm a cult leader. I don't see anybody holding you back. I'm the dumbest cult leader on the man because I've been putting these 13 and a half on people's behinds for so long. A cult leader. We want you to slow down because we really care for you. As our relative, you're going to destroy and ruin your life by doing all this stuff. Don't do this. You're better than this. Then he goes to the other extreme. In closing, being an overmuch wicked. Don't be too righteous. Don't be too evil. Just be moderate. Skirt that fence. Walk that line. Be lukewarm. Be not overmuch wicked, neither be thou foolish. Why shouldest thou die before thy time? So he gives equally foolish advice to those who are trying to live righteously, and I still don't think it's righteous before God, but to live a righteous life in this world, and then equally dumb advice to those who are already fools. Don't increase in your wickedness, and don't be a fool. Why should you die prematurely? What's his reasoning? What's his conclusion? Look at the next verse. It is good that thou shouldest take hold of this, yea, also from this withdraw not thine hand. He that feareth God shall come forth of them all. What? It's good to grasp one, not let the other go. Be moderate. This is the plan of God. Don't be overly righteous and don't be overly wicked. Just be kind of middle of the road, wicked, evil. In other words, be the standard professing believer today. They must have read this and got the wrong conclusion. They must have thought that God actually sanctioned this kind of nonsense that we see as the normal professed Christian experience today. Because this describes many professing believers. They're moderates in their wickedness. They're moderates in their righteousness. They're not really one or the other. Now, of course, that's their view, and maybe the view of many under the sun, because God considers them just downright wicked and hypocrites, but that's for another message. But Solomon says, hey, you know, why bother yourself? Be moderate. Just be moderate. The man who fears God will avoid all extremes. Grasp this truth about moderation. Don't be too righteous or too wicked. Live moderately and not too extremes. That's that sign. Time for us to pray. Lord, thank you again so much for the word tonight, and may you be glorified in all of it, Lord. And thank you again for just making the truth plain to us. And thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.